One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Legends, the greatest social casino experience has arrived at Legends.com. With thousands of the best free-to-play casino-style games, chances to earn millions of bonus coins and win real money. Legends is revolutionizing the Vegas experience wherever you are. If you love winning, then you'll love playing at Legends.com. Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Play responsibly. Visit Legends.com for more information. Legends with a Z.com is legendary fun.
My formal review of this movie was to be like, this is what y'all look like when you accept an Ozempic equivalent sponsorship for your podcast with a majority 18 to 34 year old women audience. And I meant that with my whole chest, because what the fuck are some of you guys doing?
Dude, where are you? Pick up your phone. I'm going to a song party tonight and you're obviously invited, so call me back.
Okay, love you.
What's up, you guys, and welcome back to Emotionally Online, the weekly slumber party for spilling guts and sharing secrets, hosted by yours truly, the one and only Maddie Drosbeck, co-hosted by the gooeyest girls in all the land, my resident lover girl, Miss Mango, and my two fosters, the sweeties that are terrorizing my home, Ladle and Whisk. They're running around while I film this, so they'll probably come up and say hi, try to chew on the wires of my microphone while I gently tell them that's not what we do, and they're really not that delicious. Oh, Whisk is here. I've had the girls for like a month now, a little over a month. So they are the longest fosters that I have had so far. So we'll see how long I end up with them. It's going to be a different experience saying farewell to them and to this time of fostering because of the length of time I've spent with them. It's just going to get harder and harder to say goodbye the longer they're here. But obviously I love having them around despite the fact that they are crazy town USA. Okay. They are cuckoo bonks bananas. And, they're reminding me of how Mango was. Obviously when Mango was a kitten, she was crazy and I had to slowly mold her into being the nice, well-mannered girl she is today. So I feel like 24 hours of the day, I'm like pulling them off my table, which you guys know that I let Mango walk on the table anyways. So that's like, that's not really a big deal, but they'll hop on the table and then they'll try to like knock all of my candles over and like bite them. And you know, they try to bite all of my cords and, you know, they'll hop up on my nightstand and start drinking out of my water cup. And I'm like, no, that is not yours. That is mine. We've got to learn some decorum, girls. Okay. Some manners. That's not what we do. You're very cute. You're very sweet, but we've got to behave ourselves. And they're just, they're a little freaking crazy. But they're gorgeous and very sweet, and I love them so much. Little Whisk over here, she's really taken a liking to me, and I really love her, too. She's my blind girl, my crazy little blind girl. And Ladle has taken a liking to Mango, and Ladle follows Mango around, and always wanting to be right next to her, always wanting to be cuddling with her. I've caught Mango cuddling with her a few times. I've caught Mango grooming her a few times. Mango is usually like, oh my God, get away from me. You are way too close to me right now. But over time, I've seen her start to allow it more and more. I think Mango's a very independent girl. She likes her alone time. She likes her space. She doesn't like to share me a ton of the time, but she's a sweetie at heart. She can't help it. So she is warming up to Ladle specifically because Ladle fucking loves her. Whisk hisses at Mango. Whisk is like not really interested in Mango. Most of the time not interested in Ladle either. Just wants to hang out with me. And she's so funny because she like leads with her mouth, which I guess makes sense if she is blind. It makes sense that she would be exploring the world via her mouth, but she like will lightly bite everything. And I think it's just because she's blind and she, you know, it's a different way of exploring. But it's, she's so funny. I've never met a cat like her before. She has hopped in the shower with me on numerous occasions. I've never heard of a cat doing this before in my life, but okay. See, that's what I was talking about. We can't bite this cords. Hey, whiskey. It's not that delicious, mama. It's actually kind of disgusting. You can bite the blanket though. That's fine. Yeah, she's jumped in the shower with me a few times, which is unexplainable. I've never heard of a cat doing that. But every time that I turn the shower on, she runs and she comes and she sits on the edge of the shower. I think she just likes the heat, the steam coming off of the shower maybe. But she sits there and she like debates jumping in, and I'm always like, don't do it. Don't even think about it. Leave it alone. Like, mind your business. And there's been a few times where I've turned my back while showering and all of a sudden she's in the water with me. And one time, the worst time, was when she did it. She jumped in and I was like, oh my God, no, get out. And she immediately jumped out of the shower and straight into the litter box. So she was covered in litter and I'm fucking soaking wet and covered in soap. And I'm like, dear God, stay here. Don't move. Like, don't run around my apartment soaking wet and covered in your gross litter as it's sticking to your fur. And I'm like laughing my ass off while this is happening. I'm like, there's always something around here. There's always something new happening with you guys. Oh my God.
But you are a very sweet girl, Whiskey. And I'm so excited for you to find your forever home. These two girls are still up for adoption. Heidi Wrangles Cats on Instagram. You can apply to adopt these girls. They are sweethearts, a handful, the way that all kittens are. But you guys are going to love them. Okay, no.
No bite in that. No, oh my God. I like don't realize she's like stop, please, Whisk. Please, honey. No more biting cords. No, what did you hear me just say? This is all day. This is all day. She's gonna bite my finger too. Oh my God, you're lucky I love you, you fucking rascal.
Can I just say, the comment section on last week's episode is full of the most brilliant, sweetie people on the face of the planet. Like, I know that we have an incredible corner of the internet, but I just, it's so nice to be reminded of it when we do an episode like I did last week where it's a pretty vulnerable topic. I was pretty, you know, bearing my soul. Episode just crying on cam. Somebody was like, is he emotionally on wine podcast? I'm like, yeah, something happened. I opened up a bottle of Pinot Grigio and all was let loose. I'm like, do you guys want to know about my existential fears about the future and getting older and dying alone and having no family of my own anymore? And then everyone in the comments is like, girl, me too. And I'm like, oh, thank fuck. Those comments were so pleasant. They were so nice. You guys are so brilliant. And, you know, the internet can be a crazy place. I've dealt with my fair share of nonsense on the internet. But for the most part, you guys are fucking fantastic. And particularly the comment section of the last episode was just like full of really comforting and fascinating conversation. So I just want to thank you guys for being the friggin' best and also for reassuring me in my panic that, number one, I'm not alone in that feeling, but also to those of you that have like sort of surpassed this phase of life and can look at me and be like, don't worry about it. Like, I've been where you are. I have, you know, been through my late 20s. I'm now older through that period of life, and like, it does get figured out and you will grow into this next phase. I appreciate your wisdom deeply. It is like, it's weird to like really feel the differences and like changes start to happen as you age up into like the next, I don't know, category of life experiences. And I've just really been feeling it lately. And
you know, that comes with all of its own fears and realizations. And I just appreciate you guys imparting your wisdom on me because it was really comforting. And yeah, I'm just grateful for this space. I have spent my week talking about nothing else besides the fact that I've been digitizing my closet. Have been. I did. I fucking did it. It took me 18 hours over the course of 4 days, but I fucking did it. And I am obsessed. I'm fucking obsessed. I need this app to sponsor me because I am about to become their biggest fan, the same way that I am Letterboxd's biggest fan. I'm about to go hard for this Index application, okay? Letterboxd and Index, you need to sponsor me because I ride for your applications, okay? I love data. That's the thing about me. I was fuck math all throughout high school, and I still am. Fuck math. I mean that from the bottom of my heart. However, data, statistics, a pie chart, like, that actually makes me fucking horny. I'm not kidding. I love data. Letterboxd gives me such good data. Index, such good data. Okay? The understanding of it all, having this bird's eye view picture of my closet, the value of my closet, the cost per wear of each of my items, which categories in my closet I have the most items of. Having all of that information now, having this better understanding of such a massive part of my life. It's not like I'm a, you know, a whatever kind of person about fashion. I am very invested in that. I think about clothes and my style every day of my fucking life. To have more of an understanding of myself through the 18 hours that I put in digitalizing my closet, oh my God, I can't tell you the amount of satisfaction it has brought me. Woke up, was like, okay, let me throw these pants into my creative space. And then I could wear a white top, I could wear a blue top, I could wear a yellow top, a purple top, a brown top. There's like a little brown and purple belt. Not belt. Like, it looks like fake boxers peeking out at the top of these pants. Anyways, I was like, okay, filtering out all the different colors that I could wear. And I styled these pants a few days ago with a shirt that I literally has been sitting in my closet for 2 years. Haven't touched it in 2 years. Forgot that it was there. Remembered that I owned it because of this app when I was searching for options. Went to style these pants again. Picked this shirt out this morning. It is so fun, and it's all logged on a calendar so I can see what I chose to wear every day of the year. And there's a picture of me in the outfit attached to the calendar too, so that I can always reference it. Like, I just feel like my personal style just got such a major upgrade. My understanding of my own personal style just got fucking shot to the next level. So I guess I'm doing the 75 hard style challenge, like, not officially. I might officially commit to doing it, but I'm like, okay, I'm logging my outfits every single day now, and I'm consciously trying to be more mindful when it comes to my clothing consumption and understanding of my wardrobe. To do the 75 hard style challenge is basically that, plus you're committing to no buys for 75 days. So that's the part that I'm pausing on, because I don't know if I want to commit to not shopping for the next 75 days, considering that we're about to, you know, get these Black Friday deals and all that. I'm sorry. It is who I am. I want a good deal. Okay. But I think I'm going to do half of it, where it's just like I'm getting dressed every day and tracking it and all of that. And maybe I'll officially embark on the 75 hard style challenge at the beginning of the year, post holidays. Because at that point, it's like, well, what more do you need? We got all the deals. Deals have been done and dusted. But now I feel capable of tackling something like that. And I am so excited to just learn more about my personal style through all of this. I think this is going to be like such an incredible tool for honing in on all of it. So I documented this entire process. I'm currently in the works editing that video. It should go live on Monday. So if you're interested in seeing the process of me digitizing my closet and like how I did it, the process of doing it, tips that I got from other people, and also hear me go through all of my data. That video will come out next week. I think it's going to be a good one. And if you are someone who enjoys fashion at all, I think that you would benefit from doing this. Even though I've only been done and like using the app for 3 days now, I feel confident that any person that is like a fashion lover, loves styling outfits, loves experimenting with clothes, and like have a vested interest in building a long-lasting wardrobe that feels in alignment with your style, I think you would benefit from digitizing your closet 100%. Something to think about. Something to think about. That's all I'm saying. September was a much better month for new releases as far as movies went, which thank God, because August was so bad, which I feel like I can talk about Strange Darling now because it's been released for over a month at this point. If you don't want spoilers, you can skip through this section, I guess. But I don't recommend watching this movie. So if you're gonna listen to my recommendation and say, fuck it, I'm not watching it, then like, listen to me. Because I want to rant about this movie. I think I gave it a 2.5. In hindsight, I think I would rank it lower, to be honest. What the fuck? I'm confused that people are raving about this one, to be honest. I just saw that Letterboxd put out that list of like the top 10 best horror movies that came out in 2024. The Substance was at the top, which I totally agree with. I'm about to talk about The Substance in a little bit because that was my favorite release of September, one of my favorite movies that came out this year so far. Long Legs wasn't even on the top 10 list, which is blasphemous. I fucking love Long Legs. Let me in now, not once, not twice, but as many times as I like. I fucking love Long Legs, okay? Long Legs wasn't even on the list. Which is how I know y'all are full of jokes, okay? We got jokers over here. We got comedians putting their 2 cents into these Letterboxd ranking lists. And somehow, Strange Darling was on the list for top 10 horror movies of the year. And I was like, what the fuck? So then I started going back on Letterboxd and I was scrolling through people's reviews of Strange Darling. Because I was like, can we have a chat about this movie? Can we talk about it? Because at first I was like, I went to go see it and I didn't see a lot of people talking about it when I went to go see it. So I'm like, it's not even worth me writing a big like review of this movie because I didn't think it was that like talked about. I didn't think a lot of people were watching this movie. And so I think my review of it was just to say, written by a man. Yes, I can tell because that's what it boils down to, right? I know, as a woman watching this movie, I know a man wrote this movie because a woman would never write a movie like this. And I mean that in the most derogatory way, okay? Deeply. You can tell that this movie was written by a man. Full offense intended with that one. So I didn't really go into my review of the movie deeper than that because I didn't think that anybody liked this movie. Oh my God, boy was I wrong. Because why the fuck is it on top 10 list? So then I start going through people's reviews on Letterboxd. And I'm reading what people have to say. And then I'm reading the comments and seeing people get into fights back and forth in the comments. There were some people in the reviews for this movie suggesting that it seems to be a little misogynistic and perhaps written from like an anti-Me Too perspective. I think that is a completely fair criticism of this movie. In fact, I felt similarly when watching it. The movie has a non-linear structure to it. And for a lot of the movie, you think that the man, there's a man and a woman, the two leads. For a lot of the movie, you think that the man is a serial killer and he's chasing her, his victim. You find out later on in the movie, because it's all going back and forth, it's jumbled together, that the roles are actually reversed and that she is the serial killer and she tried to kill him, but he's a cop. And so he tries to chase her down and basically kill her instead or hold her accountable. Whatever. So for a lot of the movie, I actually really liked it. For the first, like, two-thirds of the movie, I liked it. I liked the nonlinear storytelling. The actor that plays the guy, I've seen him in quite a few things recently. He was in Dinner in America. I liked him in that. I thought that he was good in this. Like, and I saw him in something else too. I don't know who that is, but I've seen him in a lot recently and I do like him. I thought he did good. I thought it was an interesting story. And then in the third act of the movie, it does something unexplainable. And this came after the reveal that the woman was actually the serial killer and not the man. Because I liked that. I liked that, oh my God, we just learned, you know, halfway through that we can't trust any of what we learned so far. And it's actually the reverse is true. This is cool. That's fun. That's interesting. I thought that was great. There is one scene where things take a sharp left turn to me in the third act, which I will tell you about in a second. But there were a lot of people in the reviews of this movie calling that out and being like, whoa, okay. This movie left a sour taste in my mouth. There were some people that were like, I can't pinpoint exactly why. I just don't feel good about this. And that's how I felt immediately leaving the theater, where I was like, I feel like I was just bamboozled a little bit because I liked the movie up until the end. And then I was like, wait, what the fuck? What was the excuse me. What did you want the takeaway to be? What was the lesson we were supposed to learn here? Say it to me slowly. I need to check something really quick. And there are obviously people in their views that were saying that the movie seemed a little misogynistic, a little bit anti-Me Too, which I think is a fair criticism. Whether or not you agree completely or personally perceived the movie that way, I think understanding the third act of the movie is kind of hard to be like, that's not a valid criticism. Like, it is a valid criticism and it does make sense, but people were in the comments of those reviews fighting with each other about whether or not this movie was misogynistic and anti-Me Too. And it's like, okay, guys, I think we can criticize a movie and be like, that was a little weird. That third act sharp left turn was a little fucking weird and I felt uncomfortable about it. You can voice that and somebody else can say, oh, I liked this movie and I understand why you have that criticism, but personally, it didn't hit me in that way. That's not how I perceived it. I personally liked this movie, whatever. Both things can exist at the same time without people like fighting and going back and forth. Like, it's an objectively a fair criticism once you know what happens. So let me tell you, hopefully you guys weren't like dying to see this movie. And if you are, don't listen to what I'm about to say. So to catch you up to speed with what happened up until this point, basically, she's the serial killer. He is a cop. She tries to kill him and it is unsuccessful. So then he is trying to kill her or catch her, I guess. And so we see this whole like cat and mouse type chase, yada, yada. They have a confrontation. They come face to face at this house in like the middle of nowhere on a large plot of land. When this happens, the cop calls his cop buddies and is like, you guys got to get here. I got someone. Some stuff's happening. Crazy things. Exactly like that. And so then as he's waiting for his cop buddies to arrive, she like outsmarts him and kills him. So he's dead. Also, fair warning that what I'm about to tell you, what happens next in this movie is incredibly triggering to victims of SA. So maybe skip this. I'm giving you so many warnings. So the cops show up and she's handcuffed to this freezer and there's a dead guy right in front of her. So when she hears the cops arrive, the backup arrive, and there's one woman and one man cop that show up, she pulls her pants down around her knees and starts crying to make it look like she had been assaulted and that this was like an act of self-defense that she killed him, rather than it being that she was a serial killer, which she was. All right. Not loving this choice, but like, let's see how it plays out. And how they decided to play that out was that when the cops come in, the woman cop immediately runs to the aid of the serial killer, who is faking the fact that she was assaulted, and is like, oh my God, let's get her helped. Let's uncuff her. Let's, oh my God, honey, are you okay? Like, is so empathetic towards her. And the man cop is like, what are you doing? We have to follow protocol. Like, we don't know what the situation is. And the woman cop is like, oh, shut up. Don't you see? Like, she's a victim. And they have this little back and forth that happens. And to make a long story short, the man cop ends up dead because of the woman cop's empathy towards the serial killer. They, like, you know, they treat her like she is a victim. They get her in the back of the cop car. She pulls out a gun and is basically like, says to the woman cop that she can get out and run because she was kind to her. But the man cop, he was going to die. So I was like, okay, let me think about this for a second. So at the end of this movie, someone dies, and the reason why they die is because a woman was too immediately empathetic to another woman, to seeing another woman who looked like she had been assaulted, because a woman immediately assumed that this woman was telling the truth, a man ended up dead. I was like, not loving the optics on this one. I'm really not loving what I'm hearing the takeaway of this is. I'm like, okay, so the takeaway here, I'm supposed to leave this movie. It is over. Movie just ended. And the takeaway here is that women lie, and other women who immediately believe the stories of other women simply because they're women are dangerous and can pose life-threatening suffering to men. Sorry, huh? So yeah, I left that movie theater and was like, well, that was a little fucking weird. Wasn't it? Because the whole first two-thirds of the movie, I was like, okay, I'm liking this. It's fun. It's a fun little chase horror movie. I'm scared. I'm in it. And then it takes that turn at the end. And I'm like, okay, is this really the storyline we want to take? Is this really the movie we want to make now? When we have a rapist running for president, like, is this really the story that we find the most compelling and inspiring right now? To be like, well, some women lie, and if you believe them, a man's gonna end up dead. Like, sorry. Was it crazy that people left that movie and were like, that felt a little misogynistic and anti-Me Too? No, it wasn't crazy. And so I gave that movie a 2.5 because I did like certain aspects of the production. But the more time that passes, the angrier I am about the movie itself and the more confused I am that the movie had a lot of positive reviews. Because I'm like, I've got questions for the writer. I've got a lot of questions for the writer. I actually would want to know a lot about the writer's personal life. I want to sit down and ask them questions. I don't know. Anyone else that watched Strange Darling, did you also leave the theater with like a sour taste in your mouth? How has that sour taste sat with you as time has gone on? Like, I just left that theater like, okay, so a man wrote this. This is a man's doing. And what a like shitty storyline. What a shitty thing to have turned this into. Even if they were going to go with like the faking the assault turn, to have it end in the way that it did, where it's like they made the cop overly empathetic, which that itself is like fucking. But they make the woman cop overly empathetic to the point where she can't do her job correctly, and then it results in a man dying. And look, why did we have to do that? You know, I just thought it was weird. I thought it was a weird choice, and I thought that it was a dangerous choice as well, given the climate we live in, where a rapist is running for president, and there are like tons of people, like 50% of this country, that's fucking cool with that. Sorry that I'm not that interested in a movie where a woman's empathy gets a man killed. Not interested in that. I like, can we just have like fun serial killer movies? I know that probably sounds counterintuitive, but I'm a horror lover. Okay, I love horror movies. I love the chase of it all. I loved the reveal that she was actually the serial killer and it wasn't him. But then when you include the cops and you have that whole thing play out, it left a totally different taste in my mouth by the end. Anyways, crazy. That came out in August. Not a fan. Would probably rank it lower in hindsight. September was a much better month for new releases. I saw The Substance, which I fucking loved. It's my number three movie of the year. Challenger is still number one for me. Then Dee Dee, then The Substance. Which, if you look at my top four of the year, Challenger, Dee Dee, The Substance, and Ghostlight, I feel like they hit on like all of my major interests. Or not like my major interests, but like major like pillars of my identity. Challenger's bisexual, hot, horny bisexual, check. Dee Dee, internet kid. Cringe, corny, internet, YouTube kid, check. The Substance, the whole thing is like a conversation on body image, body alterations, Ozempic and the like, a criticism of it. Hugely one of my favorite things to do. Dunk on that shit. For Ghostlight, which is a movie about the healing power of theater. And family. Oh, these four movies. Honestly, it makes sense to me that these are my four favorite movies of the year, because I'm like, okay, well, you just listed out some major parts of my identity. So loving that, The Substance needed to be added in there. Okay, if you haven't seen The Substance, if you haven't heard of it, I'm not going to spoil anything for you, but what I will say is you need to go fucking watch it. It's a body horror, so it is very gross. It's not scary, it is disgusting though. So if you're squirmish, maybe not the movie for you, but it's not scary. But it's a horror movie about body image, the lengths we go in pursuit of beauty, the pressures put on women, especially as we age. My formal review of this movie was to be like, this is what y'all look like when you accept an Ozempic equivalent sponsorship for your podcast with a majority 18 to 34 year old women audience. And I meant that with my whole chest, because what the fuck are some of you guys doing? Deeply, honestly, and truly, I want to know what it's like to have no thoughts inside your brain, because that is what I can only assume those of y'all that do that are doing. I assume there's nothing going on up there, because if there was, that would be an insane decision to make. I feel like it is so reckless to know you have an audience comprised of mostly 18 to 34 year old women, and to accept an Ozempic equivalent sponsorship. I've seen it multiple times now at this point. I've seen it through the company Hers, I think it's called. They have Hers and then they have Hims, and I think they're like a online doctor telemedicine company, and you can get different prescriptions through them. I know they do acne medications and like hair loss for men, things like that. And I've seen a few different podcasts accept sponsorships for them, specifically talking about their like Ozempic equivalent that they're now pushing on people. That is crazy, by the way. Hey, just so you know, that's fucking crazy. What the fuck? Ooh, it makes me so mad. Ooh, it makes my blood boil. It gets me thinking. It gets me sitting and scratching my head. I'm like, okay, so you know, you're aware, you can see the demographics in your analytics account. You know that you have a demographic mostly of young women. And you're going to get on your podcast and promote a drug that is gaining in popularity that hasn't been around long enough for us to know the side effects of yet, though they have said that it is showing early signs of decreasing bone density. So y'all have fun with that. You're going to get on your podcast and promote this weight loss drug that we don't know shit about yet because it's trendy and it's what's hot right now. And you know, the reason why this brand is reaching out to you to sell this is because they know that you have a vulnerable audience, that they know your audience is within the demographic they're trying to sell to. And you're selling your audience out. You are accepting money from a company that wants to prey off of your audience's insecurities. Oh, it makes me mad. Oh, it makes me so mad. And so as I was watching The Substance, I was like, this is literally what y'all fucking look like, promoting Ozempic equivalents on your fucking podcast. Goofy as fuck. I cannot. Promoting shit like that, accepting money to promote shit like that is so fucking dirty to me. So I won't say anything more. But if what I just said makes you feel passionate and fired up, then you should go see The Substance, because it is crazy cuckoo bonks bananas, and it was so much fun. Loved it. Fantastic movie. Getting great reviews. Then a few days ago, I went and saw A Different Man with Sebastian Stan, who is so sexy. Can I say that? He is so sexy. And he is so talented as well. This is probably my favorite thing that I've ever seen him in. A Different Man. I didn't realize before watching it, because the trailer, like, it gives you a good picture of what it's about, but I didn't realize, like, truly how much of an overlap it was going to have with The Substance. Huh. I was like, okay, this is a great little double feature moment. Different Man isn't a horror movie, but it's, you know, similar themes going on here. And I also loved it. I gave The Substance 5 stars, and I gave A Different Man 4.5 stars. So, fall already looking fantastic with the new releases. I'm seeing Joker tonight, which I've already promised I will give a good score, because anything that Lady Gaga is a part of is immediately fantastic. It can be the shittiest thing ever for other reasons, and Lady Gaga's inclusion of that thing is still perfect. Even some of Lady Gaga's worst work, Jewels and Drugs, even Lady Gaga's worst work is better than some of y'all faves best, okay? And I mean that with my whole chest. Jewels and Drugs is better than Katy Perry's entire discography. And I've always said that. You know, Teenage Dream was good. One of the Boys, fine. Anything that happened after that, anything that happened post-2010, bad. Doo-doo. No good. Long time said that. No, I've literally always said that. The truth is just that I ride so hard for Lady Gaga, which, while we're talking about Lady Gaga, there was an audience submission about Gaga this week that I did want to bring up, just so that I can talk about my woman, my lady, a little bit more. I fucking love her. Ah, I'm so excited for Gaga music to come out. It's happening this month. I'm so excited. The last time a Lady Gaga album came out, I didn't have a podcast. Do you understand what's about to happen here? Unprecedented things are happening on this microphone over the next 6 months. I'm not going to shut up about it. So strap in. Anyways, here's a submission. Somebody said, "Hey, Maddie, we are 2 regular listeners and dedicated viewers of your slaying content. We want to thank you for being the starting point of our friendship. We met each other in university, but since we noticed we both watch your content, we started to have deeper conversations. Your takes were often the inspiration for reflecting on our relationship with our bodies, queerness, love, and life in general." Love that. Literally huge. Fantastic to hear. Thank you for telling me that. That makes me feel wonderful. "Since you talked last episode about Lady Gaga and going to see her at the cinemas, hopefully it was great." I haven't seen it yet at the time I'm recording this. I was just preemptively excited, but I am seeing it tonight. "We wanted to ask if you can introduce us to the Gaga universe. We recently talked about queer icons and noticed that we have been sleeping on the queen of the queens, Lady Gaga. We both came out only some years ago, and when we were younger, we thought Gaga is just weird. Looking back, we really want to learn more about this queer queen and what it meant for you to grow up with her." I remember where I was when I first heard Lady Gaga's music for the first time, we were driving home from Maine and we were at the top of my driveway. We had a long driveway in my childhood house. We were at the top of the driveway about to come in. My mom was reaching out, getting the mail, and Just Dance came on the radio. And I heard a few seconds of that and I said, this is just scrumptious. This song right here is pretty fucking fantastic. And this was like, it was an immediate love for me. I heard Just Dance and then I was like, okay, banger, smash hit sensation. That's my fucking mother. And this resulted in me following the development of Lady Gaga's career. So I've really been around since day one. Day one, Just Dance dropped. I'm in middle school. I'm like, this shit eats, okay? I had taste back then. I have taste now. Some of us are just born with it. It's genetic. I'm sorry. Some of you bitches are unsalvageable in that department. And I've talked about this with some of my New York friends because I think maybe it was different school to school, but like I've had conversations with some of my friends that grew up not in the same town as me, where I've talked about being a Gaga fan growing up and how like I was in the trenches in middle school specifically, okay? The rise of Gaga when all of that was happening. Do you understand? I had to go to school prepared to give like argumentative essays explaining the reasons why Gaga made the choices she did, what her music videos were doing, when she wore the meat dress, when new songs came out. I had to come ready to defend with my life everything that she did, because all anyone would do is make fun of her and be like, this is too weird, this is like, I don't get it, she's so this, she's so that. Nobody understood her, and it would make me so mad, and I came ready. I was in the trenches. But then I was talking to some of my friends that didn't grow up where I grew up, and they were like, oh my God, that was not the case in my school. Like, everyone loved Lady Gaga. It was like cool to like Lady Gaga. And I was like, that was not the case in my fucking high school. For sure not, okay? So let me put it in perspective for you timeline-wise. I'm in middle school, which is notoriously the most awkward and painful, horrible time in life ever anyways. I have horrible self-esteem. I'm being bullied for my appearance, for my videos that at that time I was posting on Facebook instead of YouTube, for the fact that I did theater, everything. This was the age where people would write Facebook statuses about me. I would get home from school. This was like 2009. Get home from school, I'd log on Facebook and I'd see somebody write a status about the fattest girl in homeroom. And I would read it and be like, hold on, carry the one, add the two. Oh, they're talking about me. Like, I was not dumb. I knew when people were talking about me. And everything I did was so uncool. All the clothes that I wore were so fucking uncool. I remember there was this one time I was wearing a button-up shirt. And at the time, my chest was starting to come in. And the buttons were pulling away from each other because the shirt was a little bit too small for me now that I had boobs. And I remember being absolutely mortified because there were like three boys that sat around me because our desks were organized by fucking last name. So you couldn't sit with your friends. And all of my bullies sat around me. And I just remember them looking at each other and being like, look at her shirt, look at her shirt. And then one of them would turn behind and look at me and snicker. And they're like just bullying the shit out of me, making fun of me to my face, to each other, looking at me like I it's painful to think about. I also had really bushy eyebrows and a lot of hair on my upper lip at that age as well. So I remember there was one time where I was bullied like hell for having a unibrow in French class. And then I went and had a sleepover that weekend with some girls that were not my friends. And they bullied me like hell for having a unibrow. So then I made my mom take me to get my eyebrow waxed. My eyebrow. My eyebrows waxed for the first time that Sunday. I was like, Mom, I'm done. Everyone's so mean to me this week. You need to take the hair off my body right now. And a couple years later, I had laser done on my upper lip so that that hair would go away. It was a horrible time. I was so insecure about every part of myself. Everyone was so fucking mean to me. I have the most horrible stories from all of my middle and high school years. I've said this ad nauseum at this point. You guys know, we don't need to get into it. It was not fun for me, okay? I also, as I've talked about many times on the internet, have struggled with feeling like I'm too much my whole life. That I am overwhelming, like I'm too much to handle, that I feel too much, that I'm just like a lot. So it's not shocking to me that I was drawn towards someone like Lady Gaga, who is so passionate, is so self-certain, was so unapologetically herself and committed to all the things that she believed in. She was weird, and it was a beautiful thing. And you would go to her shows and she would make it so clear that like everyone in this room, there was a place for you here, that like her shows were just like the conference of misfit toys, and that like here you were going to be cool no matter what. And here being weird was going to be like the best thing about you, the thing that people loved about you. And I loved how when I listened to her music, when I listened to her talk in interviews, when I went to her shows, I left feeling truly comfortable in myself. And there was nothing else. There was no other media that I consumed that made me feel that way before finding Lady Gaga. And I think that, like, I know it sounds silly to some people, but I really do attribute a lot of my self-confidence to her. Because I think in an age, in a time where like a lot of my confidence was being stripped away from me and insecurities were just being added on left and right, she was this light at the end of the tunnel for me that made me believe that these people were wrong, and actually it was cooler to be weird and to be myself and to be passionate and to be loud and to be too much. I looked at her and how wonderful and, you know, magnificent and larger than life she was, and I felt like I could take up that same kind of space. And I just love her brain. I think she's so brilliant, and I loved how she was just like her passion, the like living, breathing, dying for the work, for the art of it all. I loved it. And she was like experimental with so much as well, metaphorical. I would watch all her stuff and just be like, yeah, let's dig in, let's unpack. And I loved it. I loved all of it. And then also to see at the same time, she's young. At the start of Gaga's career, she's like 21. She's a baby at the start of it all. At the beginning of her career, everyone's telling her she's fucking weird. They're scrutinizing her. She's, you know, all those weird rumors about Lady Gaga that came about at the beginning of her career. Like the fact that she really used to be in interviews and people would ask her if she had a penis is crazy. And she handled all of those things with like such grace and such tact. And I really like seeing her be so young and so brave, and the fact that she was so committed to using her fame to help queer people from the jump, seeing how committed she was in those spaces, like that was inspiring to me. And I felt like she was so brilliant and so wonderful. And obviously she resonated with me in so many ways that I don't think I even understood until later when I like fully came to terms with my bisexuality, because Lady Gaga's bisexual. And I think through watching her and listening to all the things that she said, this is the same time that, like, you know, Gaga's speaking at rallies in support of repealing Don't Ask, Don't Tell. This is like right before Born This Way comes out. She's like very politically active. And as a young person, I'm like 11, 12, 13 watching this. I'm watching this woman thinking to myself, I want to be just like her someday. Like, I want to be someone that is unapologetically myself, unapologetically weird, creative, you know, indulging in art for the sake of art, making whatever I think is beautiful and whatever I think is cool, and using that space to be a voice for causes that I care about. Being a fan of Lady Gaga improved my self-image in every way possible. I felt more confident in my talents and skills. I felt more confident in my body. I felt more confident in my weirdness, in embracing that side of myself and not needing to change myself to fit in or fit any type of mold. She made me feel like where I wanted to be was right where I was. And I literally, like, my walls were covered in Lady Gaga posters growing up. And whenever I was sad, whenever I was upset, whenever I, like, just felt so defeated, I quite literally, and this is like very cringe and also very sweet, but I would look at my Gaga posters and I would just talk to them and I would cry and I'd be like, what would you do? Because I so trusted her perspective and felt very connected to her and her music and her message and just all of it. She was like an older sister figure to me in some way. There was no, I'm the oldest sibling. I don't have any like cousins or family friends that I was super close with that were like close enough to me in age that could be like a figure for me to look up to. Like there were no like cool young women for me to look to and be like, what do I do? How do I get through this? Like I felt like who I had was Lady Gaga. The person that I looked to for support and guidance and confidence was her. And truly, every record of hers has changed me, altered me deeply in some way. Born This Way, coming out was like, I mean, revolutionary. I remember when Born This Way came out. Releases were so different back then. Like now everything comes out at like midnight, Thursday into Friday, Friday, midnight, whatever. But back then it would like the radios had a much larger role in all of this. It wasn't like the streaming services were defining everything. So I remember being up at like 4 a.m. or 5 a.m. in February when Born This Way dropped, because it dropped on her website before they played it on the radio. Somebody check me on this, because I don't remember the details specifically. So if any of you were also there when this happened, let me know how it went. But I remember it dropping on her website or something like early that morning before school, before it played on the radio. And it was playing on the radio as people were getting to school. And so I had heard it because I listened to it on my computer before I went to school that day. And then everybody heard it in the cars. And I remember getting into school that day and getting into a fight with someone who they started going on like some anti-gay rant about Lady Gaga to me, because obviously I was a very vocal fan of Lady Gaga, always wearing my merch, Little Monster for Life. Like I was in it. And so somebody had started a fight with me. I'll never forget him. He was a fucking freak. He used to walk around with a chicken sandwich in the pocket of his hoodie at all times. Don't think I forget about you. I don't. But he started going on this like anti-gay homophobic rant to me about Lady Gaga. And I remember getting into a fight with him about it. I remember fighting with this other guy about it. It was always men. I don't have any memories of fighting with women. And I remember at the end of that day, I was so upset. And I was like, none of these fucking idiots get it. I've just spent all day fighting with these homophobes. None of you get it. And I don't like you guys. And I want to go home and be on my computer and hang out with my internet friends, because those people understand me. But yeah, I've really been a Gaga fan since day one. And her, I mean, everything about her, I think just resonated with me as a tween coming into myself. She was like the image of what I wanted to be. She was an inspiration to me in so many ways and still is. And all of her records have just meant so much to me. And I also just think that she is incredibly underrated, which I know is crazy to say about someone like Lady Gaga, who is like one of the biggest pop stars ever. I understand. To me, she's underrated. To me, she deserves more flowers than she has been given. I think that she is the most talented person alive. She is a beautiful singer. Her voice is fucking phenomenal. But she's also so much more than that. Like, she's a talented creative. If you go to her shows, please, if you do yourself a favor, once in your life, get tickets to a Lady Gaga show. Let yourself experience it. Because I just think the type of performer that she is, the type of entertainer that she is so once in a generation. And I think that she is just like, it is profound to me, the level of talent that is packed into that tiny woman. And she's a wonderful actress. American Horror Story Hotel, which I famously have her character tattooed in my arm because I loved Gaga as the Countess. I love her. I loved her in A Star is Born. I thought she was fantastic in that movie as well. I even liked her in House of Gucci. House of Gucci was a bad movie. Not because of Lady Gaga, though. That's because Lady Gaga carries you guys. Like, you can't watch a movie with, like, one of the biggest talents in this generation and not give it a good score. I'm sorry. I don't care. If I go and see Joker tonight and it is Cheeks Amundo, it's still getting a good score because Lady Gaga is in it. And I understand respect. Okay? I respect my mother. So I will be supporting Lady Gaga's rights and wrongs. And I've always said that. And then Art Pop. Dude, I had to fight so hard for Art Pop. And I love that Art Pop is like, within the Little Monster community, widely celebrated as like the like fan favorite. Like the super fans, the Little Monsters through and through, love Art Pop. Born This Way in Art Pop. But Art Pop for me is like, that's that fucking album. And yes, Jewels and Drugs is on that album. But that's how you know how powerful it is. The fact that my least favorite Lady Gaga song is on my favorite Gaga album, an album that I say is perfect, no skips. That means something. That means something, you guys. Perfect album. No skips. Come on. Y'all ever heard Sex Dreams? Shut the fuck up. Manicure, Swine. Oh my God. It's just like the people don't even know what they're missing. The fact that it's like I can say those songs, I can rattle off those names, and there are some people listening to this right now that's like, I've never even heard of that. Literally, that is blasphemous to me. Go listen to Sex Dreams and tell me you're not in a better mood afterwards. There's just like so much Gaga that I feel that people don't appreciate enough. I feel like when I have conversations about Gaga with people, I know what the general public understands about her. And I feel like the general public's understanding of Gaga is significantly beneath the par that I believe it should be. I think that everybody should be a little bit more invested because there's so much more about her and her music and her discography to love that I just feel like the general public has not tapped into. And you know what? I will say, it was such a relief to me when the like conversation around Gaga switched from people like having to fight to be like, no, she's the fucking best and you guys are idiots, to people just like accepting that like, okay, this is a ridiculously talented woman. I feel like the shift happened when she did that Sound of Music cover at what award show was this? Some award show several years ago. She did a Sound of Music tribute. Yeah, Lady Gaga Sound of Music medley live at the Oscars. What year was this? 2015? So that was when I graduated high school. That makes sense to me. This is when I feel like the change started happening. It was around the time that she just put out Cheek to Cheek with Tony, put out that album. She did the Sound of Music medley at the Oscars. And that was the first time that people were like, hold on, bitch has got pipes. Like, she can sing. And it was like, yeah, I've been told you, you fucking losers. I've literally been saying that. I've literally said that the whole time. I've literally been here since 2008 being like, that woman is the most talented woman that has ever lived. And you guys have been like, I don't know about that. I can't. She's just like the most beautiful and brilliant person ever. And I love her so much. And I just owe her so much in this lifetime. I actually can't even begin to verbalize it. And everyone should really just be getting so excited for this album when it comes out soon. Well, the single's coming out October. Album probably won't come out until like February. But you guys should all be getting excited about it, and you should be preparing yourselves to listen to it, because it is a requirement by law. By law, okay? If you are a listener of the Emotionally Online podcast, if you are involved in this cinematic universe, you have to listen to the new Lady Gaga album on full. I understand that some of y'all are new here, that, you know, you haven't been around for when a Gaga album has come out. The last Gaga album came out in 2020. And my channel didn't start to pick up traction until 2021. And I didn't start my podcast until 2022. So y'all haven't been here. You haven't known me during a Gaga release era. So you're about to get to know me during a Gaga release era. Okay? Because I'm running promotions. Okay? For free. She doesn't pay me shit. She's just saved my life. And now I owe her permanently. So get ready. Get ready to listen to the new Gaga when it comes out. When that single comes out, I swear to fuck, you are not going to hear the end of it. You thought that I wouldn't shut up about Von Dutch. You just fucking wait until Gaga starts releasing new music. Oh my God. Hi, Maddie. I've been thinking so much recently about if I want to ever have kids, because I think it's an important marker to be in agreement with my partner. I feel like so many of the pro reasons for why I'd want to have kids aren't pros for my life, though. They're surrounding either what society has deemed obligatory in some way from me or from familial pressures. However, I haven't had a strong no desire to kids either. I don't know if I ever will have a concrete answer, and was wondering if you don't mind sharing how you came to a firm no with wanting kids. Was it an aha switch in your brain, or was it a gradual process of learning what you think best fits your life? Well, to be clear, I actually wouldn't describe myself as being a firm no with kids. I see myself as being a 85% no, probably no, but I'm open-minded about that changing. To me, it's always been like, I don't know if I can personally see it, but that's like when I am envisioning the future I think I'm going to end up having. But like, so many things can happen in this lifetime, right? And if I end up in a long-term relationship with someone who really wants kids, and they happen to be someone that I could see myself raising children with, and we have a lifestyle that seems like it could make sense, I'm not writing it off completely. Because to be honest with you, I think I'd be a great mom, and I think I'd enjoy raising kids. It's not something I think about and think, oh my God, that would be the most terrible thing ever. Absolutely not. I think that I would be a great mom, and I think I would enjoy raising kids, specifically daughters, because I love kids. I'm excited to be an aunt to my siblings' kids, to my friends' kids. I worked at a dance studio growing up. I taught all ages and I did the camp counselor stuff. I have always loved being, I don't know, a mentor of sorts, an older sister. There it is. I've loved being an older sister to people that weren't my siblings, being able to be like a resource to people younger than me. So I love kids. I have nothing against kids. And I think that if life shook out that way, I would be content being a mother as well. I don't picture that for myself though. Like when I think about what I think will happen in my life, what I want to happen in my life, it's not children. That's not to say that if it all shakes out differently than how I'm predicting it will, that I wouldn't excitedly go towards the direction of having children. I don't know. That's how it's going to be for me. I think to me, I've never been the type of person that's been like, I need to have kids. Like, I want to be a mom. For me, it was more like, well, if I end up in that relationship with somebody where it makes sense and we want to make that choice together, then yeah, sure, fine. But kids wasn't the prerequisite to me. To me, the thing that matters is the partner. It's the person. I want to find someone that I am in love with, that I want to spend the rest of my life with. And if that person wants kids, then we can talk about it. But if they don't want kids, then that's cool with me. It's sort of, it just is not, it's not something that I really ever thought about. Like, I think I realized, I remember talking about this with my family in high school because, you know, when you're younger, when you're a teenager and people are like making Pinterest boards for their future weddings or they're talking about what they want to name their kids, people like dream about that. You dream about this like next stage of life where you're married and you have children and you have a house and whatever. And whenever people would talk about that, I always felt like I had no idea what they were talking about. I was like, yeah, I get what you're saying. But I don't envision those things. I don't dream about them. I mean, like, I didn't even dream about getting married at that point. Like, I've never been the type of person that was like making wedding Pinterest boards when I was a teenager and like dreaming about it in that way, because it's just like a wedding. I do want to get married. I do want to have a wedding. It's just not something I've dreamt about my whole life. I've dreamt of like having a supportive, loving partner, of like being able to lay in bed and look into someone's eyes and have like deep, meaningful conversations, to like share dinner with someone, to do chores with someone. I've dreamt of that. To do stupid, mundane shit, to sit in silence while we both read or play video games or whatever. Like, that's the stuff that I've thought about. I've never dreamt of like marriage and children, though, even though I do want to get married. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just is not things that I've thought about. I feel like I've, and this is going to be an annoying sentence that leaves my mouth, because I know that you can dream about all of these things all at once. I'm just talking about what I have thought about in my brain. But I feel like I've always, when I envisioned my future, when I dreamed about my future, if I was going to make Pinterest boards on the things that I wanted to, I don't know, dream about, I would be vision boarding my future apartment, my solo apartment in New York City, or like career things. My whole life I've dreamt about my career and my individual life in New York. I think that I'm just like a very, from a young age, I was very self-sufficient and independent. And I think that rubbed off on a lot of my like goals and dreams and interests as well. I'm a more career driven person. I'm more of a creative driven person. Yes, like, I'm a very family oriented person, and family and community means so much to me, but I never dreamt of starting a family of my own. When I think about my future and getting older, it just, I don't know, it's unbelievable to me. I'm like 27 right now, and my mom had me when she was 28. My mom and dad were already married and they were about to have me at my age. My mom was pregnant with me. Imagine if I was pregnant right now. That's crazy. Like, if I was pregnant right now on this, oh my God, don't even say, I'm getting woozy just thinking about it. If I was pregnant right now, like, my, that's my mom. My mom was pregnant right now on mic, on Emotionally Online. Imagine, in another universe, in another timeline, I am my mother. My mother is me. My mother is the host of Emotionally Online, the podcast, and she is pregnant with me. That's crazy. Imagine. No, that scares me. I'm a baby, actually. I just got here. I don't know what the fuck is going on. I do not feel even a little bit equipped to mother a child right now at age 27. And in a lot of ways, I feel like I'm actually more secure than my parents were at this age. I probably was. This is interesting. I have to have a conversation with them about this. Like, I wonder, when my mom had me, did she also feel like, oh my God, I'm a fucking child, I'm an infant? Or did she feel like totally secure and ready to have a child at this age? It just feels crazy to me. I understand it's like a generational thing, and that, you know, my grandparents got married and had kids even younger, and now it's just getting older and older that people are, you know, doing that. But it's just unbelievable to me, because I genuinely cannot fathom it. And when I think about, like, if someone was going to be like, okay, you're going to have a kid in 5 years, that in my head, like if someone was like, okay, you've got 5 years and then you've got to have a kid, that fills my body with like dread. I'm like, oh my God, I only have 5 years and then I have to have a kid. Oh my God. Like the idea of someone being like, oh yeah, in 5 years, I think I'll have a kid. Like when I hear people plan like that, be like, yeah, I think me and my partner, we're going to get married in the next 2 and then have a kid in the next 5. I'm like, what? That makes me panic. I'm like, I don't like putting timelines on things. I just want to like fall in love, and when it happens, it happens. And when I get married, I get married. And I don't want to think about having to do that on a stricter timeline in order to be able to have children. I just don't want to do it. And I'll be honest with you, I'm not trying to shade people that do want to have children, but I just feel like a lot of times people end up in shitty relationships because you feel pressed for time and you feel like you want to be in a relationship with someone that you can see yourself having kids with by the time you reach like 30 at the latest. And if you're not, then like you're fucked and you're not going to be able to have kids. And if you really want kids and that's going to be your number one priority, then like the kids come first and the partner comes second. So at some point, if you really want kids, you're just going to accept what you have. And maybe you convince yourself that you actually are happy with this person. But I don't know that I buy it, to be honest. And I think that a lot of people, if they didn't want kids, they might not stay with those people. And there are probably plenty of people out there in the world that if they decided not to have kids, they would end up with a partner that is better suited to them, but instead that decided to have children and have stayed in a relationship that I feel so about simply because they didn't want to miss out on their window to have kids. Now, I think that's a fine choice to make if that's the choice you're making. If you care more about being a parent than being in like the perfect relationship, then that's fine. And some people get both. You know, some people get lucky and they do find like your perfect person and you start a family with that person. Obviously, divorce exists. But I'm just saying that I feel like it's a lot of that stresses me out. The idea of like, if I felt a pressure to have children on top of everything else right now, if I felt a panic inside my brain to be like, I need to find a partner that I want to do the rest of my life with in the next 3 years so that I can have a kid by 32. That sounds miserable to me. It sounds so deeply miserable. I don't want to do all that. I don't want to have like time limits or, I don't know. Things I have to do before a certain date. It just seems terrible. It seems awful, to be honest with you. Like, I don't want to squander the preciousness of my own life in pursuit of creating a new one. You know? Like when I see people that have been in like super long relationships and they want kids, you can tell that some of those people probably should break up, but they feel like they've poured so many years into that relationship that at that point they're scared to break up because if they did, they'd have to start all over and find someone new. And they've seen how dating has gone for other people in their friend group. And they're like, oh my God, dating's brutal out there. It's hard. Like, what if we break up? And then I can't find someone else so easily. And then I'm too old to have children. Then it's just like all over. People feel like they just have to commit to this person. I would hate to feel that pressure. I don't want to feel that. On top of that, I would fear if I made the wrong choice and I made the wrong call because I felt that pressure, because that often happens when you're under pressure and you have to make a decision, you often do make the wrong one. If I made the wrong choice about who I wanted to be with, had children with this person, and then had to spend the rest of my life co-parenting with someone that I don't actually fucking like, I think I would feel like I just ruined my own life. Like I gave up the joy of my own life, of my own existence in pursuit of a child. And I put that over enjoying the life that I was given, especially when, you know, your kids aren't necessarily being born into the greatest fucking world. So I think that's how I end up being like, you know what? I don't think kids are going to be in the cards for me because I don't ever want to feel like I'm under pressure for anything. Ever. I don't think that good decisions are made under pressure. If I tomorrow, met someone I wanted to spend the rest of my life with, and I fell in love with them, and it just so happened that we wanted to have kids, and 5 years from now I had a kid, cool. Maybe. I don't even know if I'd want to do that. Like, I say it out loud, I'm like, maybe, who knows? Like, I don't want to say hard no, but I think I'd be happier just being me and the partner and traveling and doing creative things and I don't know, having sex in the middle of the day and being as loud as I want always and never having to worry about there being a child in the other room and being an example all the time. Hey, Whisk, let's not do that. I can influence the youth without them being from me, you know? I feel like I can get the fulfillment of being a parent from being an aunt without having to fuck up my own life. I don't know. I just think that I would rather be selfish and like think about myself. And is it even selfish? I actually would argue that it is selfless to choose not to bring a child into the world if you're not 100% certain. I remain open-minded about it because I'm happy to be proven wrong. And also, like, you never know how life shakes out. But if I had to predict, that is how I would predict it. And I think it's fine not to be a firm no. Like, I wouldn't even call myself a firm no, a hard no. Pretty much. But you never know. And I think most people probably fall somewhere on the, I don't know, spectrum. I'm on the, I don't know, probably not spectrum. I don't know, probably not. 85%, probably not. 15%, maybe. 0%, hell yeah. You know? 85% no. 15% perhaps. That's where I sit. And I think that's probably where a lot of people sit too. And to be honest with you, yeah, I don't know. I just think the pressure to raise children is bad. I don't think it's good. And I think a lot of people have kids that shouldn't have kids. And I do wonder if that would be different if the pressure wasn't there. Hey, you two, can you get off my desk, please? They don't even look at me. Like, I love how I talk to them like that, like they're going to listen. Hey, you two. I got lucky. They were sleeping for most of this podcast, and now they're going cuckoo bonks. All right. Anyways, I think that's where we're going to leave it for today's episode. I've been rambling for so long. I've got to get this episode edited before heading out to see the Joker. So I'll catch you guys up on what I think about it next week. And if you're interested in seeing my closet digitized extravaganza, be sure to stay tuned on my YouTube channel. That video should be going live on Monday. And with that, I will see you guys next week. Goodbye.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Your night in just got legendary. Get ready to chase the rush, spin, win, and redeem instantly straight to your bank account at legendswithaz.com. With free-to-play slots, blackjack, keno, roulette, and more, experience all the thrills of Vegas without leaving your couch. Legends has it all.
Legends is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Must be 18 plus. Play responsibly. Visit legends.com for full details.
Get in the game now and score a 50% bonus on your first purchase only at legendswithaz.com.